Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Wednesday, June 11th, and we are still covering the absolutely insane leftist riots out of Los Angeles and everything going on with Newsom getting utterly slapped down by a judge yesterday. And we will get to that and some comments from my first guest. But we also want to know what's going on in Congress. So that brings us to Representative Chip Roy, a friend of the show, and we always appreciate when he is willing to drop by, from the great state of Texas. So good morning, Representative. And I know there's a lot going on, including an update on the FACE Act.
Absolutely. Good morning, Jenna. Hope you're doing well. And great to be on the show as always. And thank you for what you do. And well, yeah, we had a good day yesterday for life, and not just for life, but for those who want to exercise their God-given free speech rights, their rights to be able to express their views about life. As you know, and as your listeners no doubt know, we experienced a significant weaponization of the Department of Justice against the American people throughout the tenure of the Biden administration. And that was seen in significant impact on the pro-life community with the abuse of the FACE Act, which was used to overtly prosecute people who are pro-life, and the statistics are overwhelming that, you know, 97% of the prosecutions under the so-called FACE Act were directed towards people who are pro-life. Now, that act was designed in the 90s to specifically to prosecute people who, allegedly were obstructing, access or interfering with people's rights to get to an abortion clinic. But also it included churches, and it was supposed to stop. It was supposed to include, pregnancy centers, right, to be, quote, bipartisan, to be not targeted. But the data proved over 30 years that 97% of the prosecutions were against pro-lifers. And they were putting people in jail for long terms, like full 5 years. We had a survivor of concentration camps in Europe, Eva Idle, who was being prosecuted, and others. Mark Halk was a famous example up in Pennsylvania, who thankfully the jury threw it out. But there were some who were given long sentences. Lauren Handy, a progressive pro-life activist in Washington, D.C. We don't agree on much, but we agree about life. And she got a 57-month sentence. So we yesterday were able to pass a bill to repeal that law, the FACE Act, in the House Judiciary Committee. I'm proud that we got it through. There were one or two Republicans who didn't support it. I think we're going to have some issues on the House floor. So it's going to take a lot of Americans speaking out that we ought to repeal it. The last point, so I think there are some, including a few in the Trump administration, are like, no, we need to keep the FACE Act, and we'll just do it the right way. And I just disagree. I think when you create power, you create tools, you give those tools to a tyrannical state, then they're going to use them against you. I think we need fewer federal laws. I think we need to diminish the size and scope of the federal government and allow local communities and states to enforce the laws.
Yeah, and so this is excellent that Congress is focusing on this. It is a big win for pro-lifers. And so for those listening in our AFR family who, you know, this is a big priority, what can we do to support this and where it's at in Congress right now and make sure that our voices are heard to support you and others in Congress actually getting this done?
Well, the biggest thing right now is that we want to make sure everybody says to their representatives, especially Republican representatives, that you want to see the FACE Act repeal. That's the bill that we passed out of the House Judiciary Committee yesterday. You want to see that brought to the House floor and voted upon, and that you expect Republicans to repeal it. Now, again, you're going to hear some arguments where they're going to say, well, you don't need to do that, right? The fact that a statute is misused doesn't mean that we should repeal it. Well, I disagree, and I think your listeners out there need to be very clear that we do not need another federal statute. Even if the Trump administration will use it appropriately, will not target pro-lifers. And again, credit to President Trump, because he pardoned the individuals who had been prosecuted and targeted under the FACE Act, which was a great thing, right, when he first came in. But if the Trump administration is not going to target pro-lifers, that's great news. You and I both agree on that. But if they're going to, you know, and then they're going to use it to target those that maybe obstruct pregnancy centers or go or burn churches or something like that. Well, that's fine, right? I get that. But we believe there are other statutes you can go after people who are committing those sorts of crimes, and or you leave it to the state and local communities. In other words, the principle here is a higher one. Let's get rid of the, empowerment of the federal bureaucracy that is being used against the people, so that a future administration, which there will be one at some point, a future leftist administration that would be abusive of the laws, we should take that tool away. I think it's important. I think it's important to send a message. We can always tweak existing laws if we need something to make sure that really bad actors are being targeted. But I think there are plenty of laws, and I doubt any of your listeners disagree with that.
Yeah, and that's such a great point. I'm speaking with Representative Chip Roy out of the great state of Texas, and especially when you already have laws that what the FACE Act was originally designed to do is already punishable criminally in the state. And so this seems really redundant, but also just a tool that the federal government obviously can and has used at cross purposes and well outside the scope of what it was intended to be. And so for your counterparts in Congress and then also the Senate, is this something that's a focus that you think that this will ultimately be repealed and accomplished, or is that still kind of an uphill battle?
It's certainly an uphill battle, right? We need to get it out of the House. Once you get it to the Senate, right, it's going to be hard to get it through 7 Democrats, which you need to get in order to get 60 votes in the Senate. But the most important message is get it sent out of the House, and then let's see what Democrats have to do in the Senate and be able to go from there. At a minimum, it'll send a very loud signal that people expect these things to be, no longer abused and weaponized against the American people. So, you take these things one step at a time. You get it out of committee, get it off the floor, get it over to the Senate. Those are the goals.
And you had a press release yesterday that I want to get to as well, that you, along with Representatives McBath, Biggs, and Cohen, celebrate the advancement of the bipartisan effort to simplify the federal criminal code. This is legislation that would require the Department of Justice and federal agency heads to compile a comprehensive report detailing all federal criminal statutes and regulations entailing criminal penalties. This reminds me of one of the X accounts that I love to follow that's A Crime a Day. And it posts all of these ridiculous federal laws that are still on the books. Like, there was one, I think, that you can't park a giraffe under a streetlight. Some things that are just obviously so ridiculous. But I think this is a great effort. And what's the focus here?
So we decided, this is maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that we wanted to know, maybe 6 years ago, we wanted to know how many laws there are and what they are. And so I told my team to go out and figure it out, right? Go talk to the Department of Justice. So they started looking into it, and then we started asking around. And, the Crime a Day guy, great guy, we talked about it as well. No one could tell me. Jenna, literally, no one could tell me how many laws there are, much less had a comprehensive list of them. There had been multiple reports over the last 4 decades of people trying to get an answer to that. We had group set up, task force set up, DOJ set out to do it, and they gave up. It was too, quote, complex. Now, today, we've got more tools. You've got AI. You've got these different things you can do. And so we also wanted to set out and pass a statute to require it, so that now we're going to force the Department of Justice to go through and count all of the statutes, but not just the statutes, the regulations, which have tens of thousands of laws that are punishable by fines or jail time, through regulatory action. Those things are now going to be counted. We're going to have to list both what they are, as well as what the possible jail time and the penalties are, fines, as well as what the what we call mens rea is, which you understand, and how many times DOJ has been using these crimes, or how many times they've been prosecuted in the last, I think it's 15 or 20 years. So we'll get that comprehensive report. Then I want us to be able to go through it and say, okay, of these, it's probably over 5,000 statutes and tens of thousands of regs. How many of these are needed? How many of these should an American citizen face jail time? They literally have no idea it even exists, right? You gave it a good example, but there's all sorts of regulations about water accumulating on your property. You know, there was that rancher in Montana who faced jail time because he basically was putting a pond on his land, right? It's illegal to write a check for under a dollar. These are punishable by jail time. Now, yeah, we don't prosecute it often, but it can be. And these are the kinds of things that can be weaponized against the American people.
Yeah, and our founders would be absolutely appalled at that, given how much of our, most of our Bill of Rights is all about due process protections for the citizen against the power of the state, and including the federal government when notice is required, and you know all of these things, that it was never intended to be this kind of total state. So that's a great idea. I hope that that is a successful venture. And in just the last 2 minutes I have with you, Representative Chip Roy, I want to get your comments as well on the ongoing situation in Los Angeles, and you know, from the perspective of Congress supporting the Trump administration, and even this federal judge now denying Newsom's initial injunction to try to order Trump to withdraw the National Guard. I mean, this is just, to me, it's shades of 2020, and we can see that the Democrats are not focused on the right things, and I hope that that is in the mind of the American people as we head into the midterms.
Jenna, you're exactly right. I mean, the American people are seeing in full display the actual view that the radical progressive Democratic Party has regarding sovereignty, the rule of law in our country. They are totally fine with what the Biden administration had done to abuse our laws, to dump people into the United States. These are individuals who are heavily using the social welfare state, both at the state and local level, as well as the federal level. People who are on Medicaid, people who are using up resources in schools and hospitals and our law enforcement. Now you've got the Trump administration trying to enforce the law, targeting first, not only, but first, the most dangerous of these individuals, people who are in prisons and were on our streets harassing Americans, is trying to remove these individuals. And the Democratic Party can't help themselves. They're defending them. Right, this guy from Maryland, all these other people, and they're out there defending him. And, you know, Gavin Newsom is the face of this. You're seeing it in California. The judge was right yesterday to slap down California's request that they intervene. And they've said, look, we're going to give the Trump administration 24 hours that they'd sought to respond. Now, we'll see what all happens with all of that. But I think the president is well within his rights. And, in fact, he has a duty to secure the country. And look, by the way, people say, oh, Trump's just being radical. This is new. George H.W. Bush called out the Guard, brought the Marines in when they had the riots in L.A. in the early 90s. This is not new. This is important. The Trump administration, President Trump, has not just the authority but the duty to do it. And we need Congress to stand right alongside the president. We do need to get the more resources for ICE. Now, we need to get the big, beautiful bill done correctly. It's a conversation for another day. But it still needs work. It still needs to be better to save money. But, you know, that's why I wanted two bills, not one. But here we are. We need to get the resources to ICE, but not at the expense of a too big of a bill. Hopefully the Senate will improve it. But we got to stand alongside the president. We need to deliver the resources necessary at the right time and make sure that we're securing the United States, because Democrats don't want to. And, look, this is the issue of our day. The president's right. Stephen Miller's right. Tom Homan's right. Democrats are doing this on purpose to remake America. So you see it in full display, and I think this is one of the situations where what you see is exactly what is happening.
Yeah, well, Representative Chip Roy, really appreciate your comments, and we have to go to a break here, but you're absolutely right. I mean, this is the Democrats that are trying to reshape America. I think that's perfectly said, and they know that they lost big last November, and so they're pushing through policy through violence, and that should never be allowed in this country, and I'm glad to see that others in Congress are standing firmly with the president and hopefully supporting that. And as you mentioned, giving those resources to ICE. Whatever else we say about the issues with the big, beautiful bill, that is one thing that that needs funding, absolutely, is ICE and all of the law enforcement efforts related to all of this whole invasion of our country. So follow Representative Chip Roy also at Rep. Chip Roy. That's his press office where you can see all of those great press releases. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, speaking of the Democrats being smacked down, a federal judge denies Newsom's lawsuit ordering Trump to withdraw the National Guard. That was the headline late last night from Breitbart. A federal judge denied Democrat California Governor Gavin Newsom's request to quash President Trump's deployment of National Guard troops to riot zones in Los Angeles. And this judge, Charles Breyer, who was appointed by former President Bill Clinton out of San Francisco. I mean, this is not somebody that the left can look to and say, well, it was just a conservative Trump supporter. No, this is, you know, actually somebody that the left may have thought that would be in their corner. But thankfully, I think he rightly, according to the legal standard, denied Newsom's emergency request for a temporary restraining order regarding Trump deploying 4,000 National Guardsmen to Los Angeles. Breyer also granted the Trump administration's request for additional time to file a response brief, gave them a deadline of Wednesday morning. That would be today. And then there is a hearing on the plaintiff's motions, on Newsom's motion, in open court at 1:30 p.m. tomorrow, Thursday, June 12th. So let's welcome back Michael Donnelly, who is a constitutional law attorney and just excellent commentator. You can follow him at Donnelly Speaks on X. So, you know, win here, I think. And, you know, this came even faster than I think we predicted earlier this week.
Well, we were talking about it yesterday when they filed it, Jenna. And I mean, I think we knew this was going to be denied. It should have been denied. It was a request for emergency relief. I mean, give me a break. You've got 4,000 members of the armed services on the ground in Los Angeles. The president is the commander in chief, according to the Constitution. And the governor is trying to get a court, a judge, an Article III judge, to say that the president can't, you know, exercise his authority under the statute to deploy the National Guard to defend federal property. Totally ridiculous. You know, Newsom and the Democrats are trying to spin this, and it's not going to work because people can see what's happening on the ground. They see what the troops are doing. They're just standing there defending the buildings. They're not going out like after the protesters and trying to arrest them. The troops are just there protecting federal property, which is what the president has the authority to order them to do and has done so. You know, asking for emergency relief is pretty extraordinary. And in courts, this judge, I mean, there certainly have been other judges willing to grant injunctions against the administration on things like deporting illegal aliens. But in this case, the judge got it right. That's a good outcome. And I honestly, you know, as I've been researching and following the riots, which appear to be spreading to some other cities like Philadelphia and New York, it really harkens back to the summers of 2020, the whole George Floyd BLM riots. And I hope that Trump has learned his lesson, that a swift, stern, strong response to these people who really, you know, is this really about ICE, or is this just really an opportunity for Antifa and, you know, Marxist revolutionaries to get out there and throw water bottles and rocks at the police, you know?
Yeah, well said. And so, you know, what's going to change potentially at this 1:30 hearing tomorrow?
Well, right. So it was an ex parte request by Newsom, which means, you know, he was asking for immediate relief without the president and the Department of Defense even having the opportunity to respond, which the judge said no. That was an easy one. Now they're going to have a hearing in court with the president and the Department of Defense having the opportunity to actually respond and point out that some of the allegations that Gavin Newsom has made in his lawsuit are false. For example, Newsom's been out there saying that the president didn't even call him about this, which apparently the president did call him. You know, what was said in the phone call is unclear. But there's certainly, you know, some facts that are not clear. And, you know, what Newsom has to demonstrate to get an injunction is that that he or, you know, whoever he's representing, the people of California, would suffer irreparable harm if his order is not granted, right? And that he has a likelihood of success on the merits of his request. First of all, how do the people of California suffer irreparable harm when the president of the United States sends in military forces to protect federal buildings and help quell riots that are causing damage to everyone? It seems to me that reverse would be true. Secondly, the president's authority seems to be pretty clear that he has the authority to send in National Guard troops and other troops to protect federal property. So I think this is an easy one for the judge.
Well, hopefully it will be easy for him, and we'll see this continue to be smacked down, and the power that is granted to the federal government and the president by virtue of these statutes that we talked about yesterday and all of that, that it will be a decision based on the law, not based on politics. And the indication at least here is that hopefully this judge is viewing this through the appropriate lens and not looking at the political considerations involved, because that's the whole point of the judiciary, is that they should not be making decisions based on which politics they prefer, or whether or not you know, this judge likes President Trump in exercising his power in the way that he can. The question always is not should the president, that's what elections are for, it's can. And so we need to all be praying for the outcome of this, and obviously praying for the ongoing a situation in Los Angeles and around the country. I mean, there are rumors and already a few other major cities that have, you know, some of these riots. And before we get to the second topic, Mike Donnelly, I want to ask you too. I mean, this seems like such a ridiculous move for the left to continue to spark these types of protests and riots around the country over people who are here illegally. I mean, you literally have people who are in the country illegally protesting the country by waving the flag of the nation that they refuse to return to. I mean, it's just, it's utterly ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I thought Vivek Ramaswamy, you know, did a nice job kind of comparing it to some other, you know, other historical events in the past when he spoke about it yesterday. But, yeah, I mean, this is BLM 2.0 from 2020. Now, when you look at that and analyze the impact of it, 2022 wasn't good for the Republicans. But I think that this, you know, times have changed. People, I think, are looking at the left in a different way. DEI has been discredited. You know, people are realizing the truth about the impact of this illegal alien invasion that the Biden administration facilitated into our country, and the criminal impact, the drug impact that has had. And they are very supportive of the president taking very strong measures to solve this problem. And it's going to benefit our country. You know, look, I think everyone would say we're for legal immigration. This country was built in large part on immigrants. That is true. My family immigrated here in the 1920s from Ireland and Hungary on both sides. And I'm grateful for the opportunity that they had to come to this country to seek opportunity. It's about opportunity. It's about freedom. And our country is a unique, exceptional country where we value religious freedom. We value freedom of speech, which is very different from Europe and other parts of the world. And so it's no wonder that people would want to come here. The economic opportunity here is unparalleled. So it's no wonder that people want to come here. We should welcome people who come here legally who can offer something to this country. And that's what the president is trying to do. He is trying to impose laws, or not impose, he's trying to enforce the law that has been passed by Congress, who has the authority to do so. And the American people support that, as do I.
Yeah, well, well said. And let's move to this second topic that you actually brought to my attention yesterday. There was an X video post by DNI Tulsi Gabbard, and it was a little interesting. I'll characterize it that way before I get your comment on this. That warned of nuclear holocaust in what Politico describes as an ominous social media video. And so this kind of appeared a little bit out of context, I think, to just post this and say that, you know, she had visited the site of Hiroshima. She was very, you know, concerned about the atomic bomb and nuclear war. And she said that the world is, quote, closer to the brink of nuclear annihilation than ever before, unquote. And so in this 3-minute video, she details a recent visit to Japan to learn more about the aftermath of the U.S. nuclear attack on the city in 1945 during World War II. And it came across a little bit more historical and philosophical than necessarily tying it to anything in the current present. And that was where it lost me a little bit, because we're seeing, you know, the headlines with Iran and the United States being very concerned about Iran getting a nuclear weapon. And our friend Joel Rosenberg, actually, just as we were in the last break, sent me his latest story from All Israel News. You can follow that at allisrael.com. Breaking as possible Iran war looms, House Speaker Mike Johnson, a devout evangelical, is coming to Israel on June 22nd to meet with Netanyahu. So obviously these are kind of this is the context and the undercurrent. But it really didn't come across that way. And so this is a little over a 3-minute video, so I'm not going to take the time to play the whole thing. You can go to Tulsi Gabbard's personal X feed, not her DNI one, which was also interesting, and watch the whole video. But what did you make of this, Mike Donnelly? Because I thought it was fascinating that the sitting DNI would post something like this without necessarily tying it to a specific policy of the Trump administration. Is this maybe going a little rogue?
You know, it's interesting, Jenna. I didn't even notice that it was her personal X account. And, you know, I don't separate her personal X account from her persona as the DNI. Let's be clear, and let's not forget that Tulsi Gabbard was a Democrat not long ago, and she's been, you know, on a journey of understanding her values, which she's not a Christian. She's not a conservative, and Trump appointed her to be DNI because he likes her policies and her probably her capability. But she's always been and is on record as being very anti-war, which is appropriate. Like, who's pro-war? You know, oh yeah, let's go out there and pro-war. I mean, there are some who, you know, some argue that the so-called neocons and the military-industrial complex, they're all about just, you know, fomenting war so they can, you know, build weapons and sell them and make lots of money. Okay, that's fine. I mean, I'm not saying that's completely incorrect, but that's certainly not Tulsi Gabbard. But she has made that part of her line, so to speak. But this video was weird, in my opinion. I saw it within 20 minutes of it being posted, because I follow her and I've met her, as you have, and I like Tulsi Gabbard personally, and I like her non-interventionist foreign policy goals, because I think the United States, personally, my opinion is we've gotten ourselves way too involved in things all over the world, and we need to be focusing on our own house and getting our own house in order. We can't be spending hundreds of billions of dollars in Ukraine and other places when we're $36 trillion in debt. That's just a fact, in my opinion. And so I've appreciated, you know, Tulsi Gabbard's voice saying, hey, you know, let's not be interventionists. Let's be more about stopping conflict and resolving conflict and trying to bring about peace, as opposed to being very quick to engage in interventionist policies that can lead to war, as has happened numerous times over the last 25, 30 years. And I was in one of them. I mean, not that the first Gulf War was an interventionist policy, you know, George H.W. Bush, Commander-in-Chief, when I was in the Army, ordered us over there to kick Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. As I think that was the right thing to do. But again, I think the United States has gotten a little bit too far afield. But this video, the problem with the video is it comes across as apologizing for what the United States did in World War II to end the war using the atomic bomb. And that's very Obama-esque. Some of the commentators have called it that. Some people have called it cryptic, ominous, unhinged. I mean, people are just starting to write about it now since it was posted, what, yesterday or the day before. Mark Levin talked about it on his radio show last night. And so people are trying to figure out what in the world she was even talking about. It was clearly an anti-war video trying to point out the danger of nuclear war, which, yeah, we get it. But it was just like, okay, Tulsi, give us a little more clarity. Don't just talk about the impact of the atomic bomb on Nagasaki and Hiroshima and, oh, yeah, we shouldn't have war because it's really bad. You know, give us more. And she didn't. And that's what the concern – that was the concern that I had.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair concern. And, you know, and I want to be clear. I mean, you know, you and I both know Tulsi Gabbard personally. I have the highest respect for her. I think she's fantastic. I've supported, you know, her role in the Trump administration and elsewhere. I mean, if she ends up running for president someday, I think that would be amazing. I think she's a great American. And yet we can critique, you know, some of these things and rightly, you know, kind of call out, you know, some of the maybe a little bit disjointed messaging from someone who currently is in the Trump administration. And so in just, you know, the last minute or so we have with you, Mike Donnelly, do you think that this was posted perhaps intentionally trying to get a headline, which, as we all know, is the best way to get Donald Trump's attention, to kind of promote more of her view on this? And maybe there's some conversation in the background in the Trump administration.
That's probably true. And, you know, there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that we don't see. And war by headlines is interesting. I mean, you were in the first Trump administration, or around it at least, so you know how that all works. That's unfortunate if that's the case. And there certainly are different factions, right, pulling some want to go this way, some want to go that way. And it does seem like there is some conflict going on around this, around the Iran war, the Iran situation, the Ukraine situation. Mm-hmm. Different interests, different forces are pulling in different directions. So that could be what's going on. But I didn't find this particularly helpful. Certainly has created some headlines, though. So if that was her goal, she's probably achieved it. I guess we'll have to see what happens in the day.
Well, especially because Politico made a great headline today. But Mike Donnelly, always appreciate it. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. This June 24th marks 3 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. But here's what you may not know. Abortion numbers have surged to a 10-year high. The battleground has shifted from the courtroom to our homes. Today, over 60% of abortions happen through the abortion pill, taken in silence and often alone. Preborn Network clinics are standing in the gap, meeting women in their most desperate hour. And here's what they're seeing. Young mothers, terrified and misled, are delivering their babies, tiny, perfectly formed, onto bathroom floors. These precious babies, once called just tissue, now are lifeless. 11% of these women who take the abortion pill will suffer serious health complications. Countless others carry emotional scars for a lifetime. When you give to Preborn, you're not just saving a baby, you're saving a mother as well. You're giving her hope, financial support, and the truth. Preborn has already rescued over 350,000 babies, but there are so many more who need our help. Your tax-deductible gift makes this mission possible. To donate now, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, as we've covered the LA riots this week from a political context and perspective, and obviously a legal perspective, we want to cover as well the biblical worldview of immigration and nations. We've talked about that on this show in the context as well of God's sovereignty over nations, Acts 17 teaching that God made from one man every nation of mankind, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries being a key word of their dwelling place, and that nations are divinely ordained. We've talked about the role of government in maintaining justice. Romans 13, 1 Peter 2, 13 through 14 affirm that civil governments are instituted by God to punish evil and reward good. And there's also another facet of this as well, that if you go a little deeper than just that, the Old Testament repeatedly calls Israel to love and treat the sojourner justly. So this is not a perspective that Christians should take to automatically say that anyone coming to this nation should be treated with hostility. And I think there's a balance here between someone coming into this country illegally, breaking the law, versus someone who has earned the right through our process to come here, and the moral imperative to treat genuine immigrants with dignity, fairness, and compassion. But that also includes assimilation and a type of covenant community, if I can characterize it that way, because biblical hospitality didn't mean moral or cultural relativism. Sojourners, and that term in Israel, were expected to abide by the laws of the land. You can see that in Exodus 12, forsake pagan practices, respect the covenantal identity of God's people. And I think this demonstrates that the Bible supports the idea of national identity rooted in the Judeo-Christian founding here in America, shared values and moral order. So the biblical framework expects lawful immigrants to integrate into our nation's cultural and legal fabric. And so with this, let's welcome in Dr. Alex McFarland, one of my favorite people at AFR. And I'm so excited to see you this weekend, Alex, at AFA Activate, and everyone who'll be joining us in Tupelo for this conference. But I want to get your perspective as well, and maybe an expansion on what I've just described, on how we as Christians need to rightfully and truthfully look at this whole immigration topic.
Well, Jenna, thanks for having me. Good morning. And yes, I'm looking forward to hearing you speak this weekend. Hey, let me just get straight to it on the question of illegals and open borders. There are some, and I've had, different Christians on interviews take me to task and essentially conflate compassion with the necessity of having open borders, not really holding illegals or immigrants to the rule of law. And I don't think that's biblical nor just, really. And they kind of base it largely on verses like Exodus 23:9, "You shall not oppress a sojourner, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt." Let's talk about this for just a moment, because the Hebrew word that in English is translated sojourner, it can mean an alien in a land, but it also means a guest. And so when people are crossing the U.S. borders illegally and they're coming here and committing crimes, not all, but even those that are just lawfully trying to work a job, but are here breaking law by not going through INS and migrating here and assimilating, there's no biblical precedent, Jenna, for giving them a pass on following the laws that the rest of us are held accountable to. There's nothing necessarily Christian about giving a subset of the population a pass on living lawfully.
And that's such an excellent point, that the leftist worldview that is for globalism, and remember, all of their arguments are to advance their preferred outcome. So it's not really that the left wants to be compassionate or humanitarian. They just want to guilt the rest of us into thinking that we have to. And especially, I always love, Alex, the people online who say, well, you're a Christian, so therefore, and they don't believe in God. They don't care what the Bible says. They don't know what the Bible says. And so, the God that they don't believe in, they think they know better what he prefers for my worldview to be, which I think is ridiculous. But they use all of these facades and these arguments that really miss the entire point. And we need to ensure that as Christians, we understand where compassion is truly Christ-like, but where justice and morality and law-abiding order and national sovereignty and all of these things that are rooted in biblical principles and truth also have to, if I can borrow the leftist term, coexist peaceably, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly. And let's remember this about the call it liberal, progressive, woke, globalist left. They're very selective about how they acknowledge and apply law. For instance, the U.S. Constitution guarantees the right to life, that the government will protect your inalienable God-given right to life, although they will selectively slice and dice, and they advocate no legal protection for the unborn. So here's a subset. And also, I mean, I've been, Jenna, I've, you know, debated or done Q&A at colleges where they want to crunch the numbers on the elderly and withhold medical care for, quote, non-producers. So, folks, you're getting in a deal with the devil whenever you try to discuss law with a leftist. I mean, either we believe in absolute truth and objective morality, or it's going to be just this very selective, very relativistic application. So when it comes to aliens, okay, the Old Testament uses, in the King James, it's very often translated sojourner. But, you know, think about this. And the word can mean an illegal. It can mean a guest. It can also mean a slave, because Exodus 23:9 says you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. So here's the thing. The kind of bleeding heart, liberal, crocodile tears leftist who says, oh, you're a Christian, therefore, if you love Jesus, you'll be for open borders. Really, well, if you're going to just, you know, arbitrarily pull the word sojourner out of thin air, does that mean it was okay for the Egyptians to make the Jewish people slaves in Egypt? It says, do not oppress a sojourner. You know the heart of a sojourner, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. It's not at all good hermeneutics to try to conflate the fact that there are, in any nation, there are citizens and there are non-citizens. And let me just give you this, Jenna, and I'm sure you probably know some of this, but the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, okay, from January 1 to April 30th of this year, and May and June stats are not in, but there were 5,178 arrests of illegals. And these included assault, battery, burglary, rapes, DUIs. I don't know, just a week and a half ago, a young man from Texas, a Hispanic, had three times the blood alcohol limit, driving a rental vehicle, crashed, killed a busload of I think it was 9 tourists, 11 homicides, almost 3,300 illegal entries. And so here's the thing. There is nothing Christian nor even rational about giving a subset of the population and their first contact with America was to break a law and enter illegally, and just to say, okay, well, because you're here and you're a non-citizen, you don't have to obey the law. That's not even rational. Now, to something you said a moment ago, Jenna, of course we're not to treat people with hostility. I don't think we should presuppose evil against anybody, because 1 Corinthians 13 says love believes all things, which really doesn't mean we're gullible and believe everything, but it literally means we believe the best about somebody unless proven otherwise. But here's the thing, that for the long-term sustenance of our country, the greatest good is to maintain a stable, sustainable, lawful society. And I'll say this, I'll throw it back to you. Great ethicists over time, whether it be Augustine or even Martin Luther King Jr. in the 20th century, the first hierarchy of justice means that we look after family, the family of God, but citizens, a government that works and taxes and exploits the citizens to the detriment of the citizens and the to inure to the good of the non-citizens, that's unjust. We'll serve the non-citizens, but first and most primarily, we look after the interests of those that are the tax-paying citizens living constitutionally. The left has it upside down.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there would be no reason for nations and borders and a constitution that provides limited powers to our government if the purpose wasn't to protect our citizens and what it means to be an American. Being an American citizen isn't just a mindset. It's not this this spectrum of how you feel, like critical theory from the left would suggest about, you know, gender and all kinds of things. That it just it's something that can be discreetly and concretely defined. And so when the left is trying to push a completely opposite theory of how to approach immigration, and they're doing so this week with outright violence. What is the best way for Christians in America to speak truth in love to these issues so that it's not that we fall for the pretext of compassion, but we don't lose the compassion where we should apply it altogether?
Great question. Great question, Jenna. Well, I think politically and spiritually, Christian citizens need to avail themselves to every recourse. Politically, I think we need to contact our elected officials, even if they are of a different party, and just say, you know, I am such and such a citizen. I'm deeply concerned for the lawlessness in our country, and I hope, as an elected official with a fiduciary responsibility, to uphold not only our Constitution, but the interests of your constituency, of which I represent a part. I'm looking to you and counting on you to uphold the laws as written. And then, of course, we need to pray. I want to call, Jenna, I want to call on my fellow pastors. And I am pastoring a church right now in North Carolina, pastored two previous in 35 years, spoken in 2,200. Pastors, you must use your pulpit and your platform to speak biblical worldview truth. And brother pastors, do not just get up and say nice little warm fuzzy things that you think are popular. It is time that America's clergy do what clergy are supposed to do and speak truth, even if that is hard truth. We are to follow the rule of law. We expect people who migrate here to follow the rule of law. And it is not good stewardship at all, not biblical, to allow our country to the systematic dismantling of America and the West by design. One of the greatest things, Jenna, that threatens the Great Commission is the dismantling of America, really. And so, pastors, it's time we get up and we preach more than motivational speeches. Get up there and preach the Word of God about truth, morality, gender, accountability to the laws of man and the laws of God. If 345,000 pastors would get up in their pulpit and start teaching biblical worldview and bathe it in prayer, Jenna, I think we'd see a change in our nation.
Absolutely. And I think we would see a change and not just a political divide along party lines. And, you know, what we've seen that, frankly, you know, a lot of the MAGA or Republicans or, you know, however the right wants to define itself, in part, sometimes not being in lockstep with the biblical worldview because it is partisan politics over truth. And we need to call that out, but we also need to call out the lies of the left, because the orientation here should not be whether you are blue or red or independent or whatever. Those should be policy perspectives that are an outgrowth of first and foremost having our identity in Christ and a biblical worldview framework of what the Lord himself establishes, ordains, and then also teaches, instructs, and commands on nations. And so this is what we mean here at AFR when we say that we should have a biblical worldview perspective in everything, including politics. It is not that I am a conservative or Republican or whatever first. It is that I'm first and foremost a Christian, and therefore necessarily I have to be consistent with what God teaches on the issues that touch and concern public policy and politics. So Alex McFarland, really appreciate your time so much. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at afr.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.